This is a production of Cornell University.
GPSA meeting, January 29th, 2017.
Once we know who's in the assembly.
Can I have the list?
We don't have any of our master's students.
No. So no David.
No David.
Anything out there have a membership there?
No one.
That should be fine though. That's right.
I think we got everybody. David. I think we counted everybody.
I have it.
Brand new.
Wow. Great. Can we use that to call the rules?
I haven't seen that one before.
Excellent. Wow. How professional looking is that? Excellent. Okay. Andrew Tessie is me, and I'm here. Mike Walsh.
Yep.
Arnold. You.
Here.
Karen is not here. Ellen. Zoning. Accused. Anne-Marie.
Yeah.
Michelle. Anna.
Here.
Major is accused. Rebecca.
Here.
Kyle.
Yep.
Kenny. No Kenny. David.
No David.
Charles. Cecilia, Kevin, Gwen, no Gwen, and Tamara. Excellent. Thank you very, very much. And I feel like we've done the official thing. Excellent. So, let me get this
up. Right now. Welcome all. Happy New Year. Hope you're enjoying the view.
Yeah.
Hopefully all this running around hasn't confused or lost anyone.
And the food and that kind of thing. Thank you very much for those of you that had last week scheduled. Thank you for making accommodations for this week. There's no minutes to approve today that I found, so we'll probably have to do some of that at the next meeting. And I wanted to start by introducing a couple of people. We have a new student clerk. Please welcome Natalie Koo.
Hi.
Yay.
Thank you. And so Natalie will be here at our assembly meetings and at our council meetings. Is Diane Thompson here too? Yeah. Okay. We'll look for Diane Thompson. She's Richard Keeley, who was the interim director of graduate student life in the graduate school, replacing Victoria Blodgett. Has left the position to take up the full-time directorship at Cornell. So we have a new liaison in the department in graduate studies, and that's Diane. And so hopefully she'll be here soon. And I wanted to start with committee reports. And if anybody else has anything to report, we should probably start with the executive. I wanted to remind you of a couple of things. First of all, the upcoming CJC meeting next week, next Monday, which they're having an open forum to discuss changes to the campus code of conduct, if you or anybody else is interested in going. Also, welcome back. I hope you had a great break. And I am very, very pleased to announce that the Resolution 5, which we co-authored with the Student Assembly, has passed the Board of Trustees, which means that as of now, there is now a reserved seat for graduate students on the Board of Trustees. So I think we should give ourselves a round of applause and give Doug Vitaratonda and Mao Yang also a round of applause. Thank you very much for your help. And Doug, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Well, I just wanted to say that the past weekend was actually one of the four big board meetings for the Board of Trustees. This one was actually in New York City. When the board meets, we meet once in New York City and three times in Ithaca. This was our one time in New York City. As I said, it's passed the board and actually passed unanimously. There's a lot of good questions about it previously that we talked about. The board was being well aware of this, so it, you know, it was pretty clear to all the board members what we were trying to do. And you know, everyone was pretty supportive of it. In terms of other things the board talked about, I just wanted to mention that the board, the Committee on Student Life meeting, the board was made aware of the Krauss report and the changes that are being discussed on campus, and you know, the board, you know, really feels this is an important matter, and just to reiterate, the board to go to the meeting on February 4th to make sure your opinions are considered, are, you know, heard, and you think pretty critically about the discussion.
Mal, do you have anything else to add from this weekend's meeting? Great. Well, thank you very much for representing us. I think that's pretty much it from the executive committee, although we had a busy break looking over the charter and come up with some changes, which we'll be talking about later. Any other committees that have anything to report? I know events have some. Yes. Go ahead.
All right.
You can finish eating first.
Okay. There have been some things going on with the events committee. Our big event is going to be the grad ball. And due to a lot of different factors, we have to change the date from the one which we had originally reserved, which is April 14th. So right now we are looking at April 27th, which is a Friday. Still keeping Willard Street. It is not confirmed yet. Been a little bit more difficult than anticipated, but it's going to be great. So we're still going for taking over most of Willard Strait, having a band, having a DJ, having catering. And if anyone is interested in getting involved with the ball, you know, if you have bands that you would like me to look at or a committee to look at, please tell me. There's a lot of things to do. And hopefully we'll make this the biggest ever one yet. So there are plenty of open spots on my committee. If you know anyone.
Good people. Particularly if you have an in with like Red Hot Chili Peppers or something. Can I request them? Thanks. Thanks. It doesn't necessarily happen. Is there any music on the May 11th date that you might still cover that? Or does that look like a time?
I think that we're going to get April 27th. I mean, that's what it sounded like when Mike and I went to that meeting, but I thought that one of us would have received an email by now.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't.
The other option, the other thing we were thinking of was holding it during exam week, which would be the 11th of May. This seems to be the only other time it was available. But
right, which was it's also a Friday. Willard Street is booked a year in advance. And we had booked April 14th a year in advance, basically. So it's a little bit tight.
We'll keep you guys posted. Or assume that the April 27th date is much better than the exam week date.
No problem. No objections.
I mean, some people don't have exams, but I also know that, like, for example, the Johnson School is deeply ensconced in that form, that kind of thing. So, all right. Cool. Any other committees with anything else to report? Nope. Any of the professional school liaisons want to say what's going on at their school? Is anything going on? You don't have to. I just thought I'd give you the opportunity.
No date auction coming up at the vet school?
We're working on it.
Okay.
Okay, so let's move on. If there's nothing else, I want to take a moment to bring up the Graduate Community Initiative. Most of you, I think you've all received my email and had an opportunity to respond. Thank you very, very much. What we're going to do is take this sort of offline and into a retreat format and take some time to actually work through this document and come together with a sort of a common cause or a common idea about what this is going to look like, what it is we want to say, what we want to say to the administration, how we want to break it up. Because this really is something we want all of us to take ownership of and not just be like, this is what Janet wants me to write. So, because that wouldn't work. So it looks like, thank you, those of you that have gotten back to me, thank you very much. It looks like it's going to be Monday. This next Monday looks like the best date for everybody. And so I've had the most number of yeses. Is there anybody that has a serious, serious issue with that date if we do it this coming Monday?
The CJC
meeting is from 4 to 6, but we'd probably start at about 5:30 and go until about 8. Which is not totally my preference, but there's, I mean, people are away on weekends, that kind of thing. So. Does that sound okay? Okay. So we're going to get started trying to plan that. I'll have an email out to you guys, hopefully by Wednesday, with a whole bunch of the details, once Amy O'Donnell gets back. Because she's ill today. But, so book that off. Book next Monday night, and we'll try and get together and do something collaborative then. Okay? Cool. Any questions, comments, thoughts? Okay. Let's move on to the business of the day. I'd like to ask Liz Georgios and her committee to make it.
Well, I thought it was a resolution.
Well, we're going to ask them to make this request.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd like to ask Liz and her committee to present the funding request that they presented to us.
Hi, everyone. My name is Liz Georgios. I'm the chair of the School Safety Organizing Board and the co-chair of the steering committee with
Co-Chair Steve Hubble. I'm Liz Rappaport. I'm the admin director and I do a lot of the finance stuff for the Social Media. We were here at the fall meeting.
And I'm Jenna Lazar and I'm the vice chair of the program board and I co-chair the logistics committee.
So basically we're here to request $4,000 for the GPSA, which we got last year as well. And this is to help fund partially $7 donating the talent portion of the school day event and another between the float fest portion of the event. And we have made every effort to try to include graduate students this year. I know there was a lot of contention last year, but we're really trying to make this a graduate student event as well as an undergraduate student event and staff and faculty event that encompasses the entire Cornell community. We've extended an invitation to any graduate student that wants to sit on the steering committee, programming board, and the logistics committee, and we actually do have a representative on the steering committee from graduate students. We haven't filled with the other boards yet, but hopefully we will be, and we actually have a meeting on February 15th at 6 p.m. for the Sunday programming board, and that will be our first day of a lot meeting. So if anyone knows anyone who's interested in joining, but like I said, this is basically the biggest event for the entire Cornell community, and we really want graduate students to be involved.
A good question. Liz, can you give us a history of Slope Day?
Slope Day started really in 1901, and it was originally a big kind of festival parade event that everyone was involved in. And it kind of progressed throughout the years. In the 60s, there wasn't much celebration because there was a war going on and a lot of unrest on campus. And then in the 70s, and I think it was 1979, Cornell Dining sponsored a barbecue on Live Slope, and the drinking age in New York State was 18 then, so they had beer and everyone. It was just a fun time. And I think in 1980 they added live music. And then in 1984 they changed the drinking age to 21, which meant that usually Cornell was no longer condoning an event with students underage drinking. So the event kind of shifted focus more of, since it was no longer a university-sponsored event, the students going down the slope and partying anyway. And the Slope Day Steering Committee was created in 2001 by President Hunter Rawlings to make the event a safer event, and we've been working every year since. 2003 was the first year with, again, the reiteration of a large removable event that was Fat Joe and Leslie Root, and we've been doing that every year since, and it's been improving in safety, and I think fun for
Are there any other questions from the floor?
You can contact me. My name is Liz Georgios, so it's EKG22.
What kind of events are you going to have in Slope Fest?
Well, Jen actually ran Slope Fest last year. We're looking into, if I'm going to be able to talk about that.
I ran Slope Fest last year, and I have handed the reins over to another individual who's not receiving. But we actually, we had our first logistics committee meeting today, and we discussed Slope Fest a little bit. We're looking to have some of the same types of things that we had last year, giveaways and food and stuff like that. We had a cake roll where we gave away free cupcakes. We had a ring toss where we gave away bottles of soda. Those things worked really well. We plan on having those again. We've in the past had photo keychains. I'm not sure if they're still planning on doing that, probably. They're looking into another thing called Strike a Pose, which is basically where you take three pictures with, say, the company brings like a whole bunch of props and like hats and feather boas and some things like that. And you take three pictures that any folks want, and then they give it to you in a nice, deep, like, mat frame. And it, you get it, like, right there. So they're looking at that. They're thinking about having a high striker, which is, you know, like the thing with a mallet, try to hit the bell. We're hopefully going to be having the float day ice cream, which we've had for the past few years. that might be it for right now. Yeah, and they're looking to be giving away some tickets and prizes, among other things.
The keychain photos and buttons are really popular.
Okay.
Everyone from my department did that.
Okay.
And we had a good time. So I was like, at least the graduate students that I represent really like photo keychains.
I will let them know.
And that's what the GPSA is all about.
If anyone else has other feedback about float days, I would love to hear it. Or float day in general. We're always looking for suggestions.
If there's no other questions for this group, I'd like to introduce the resolution 6, or get Mike to introduce that, which is his resolution in response to the request for float day funding. And this would grant their request of $2,000 for talent and $2,000 for Float Fest. Float Fest, remember, is the non-alcoholic portion of Float Day, which was seen last year to be the thing that would most best represent graduate student families and graduate student interests.
Okay, so basically I want to just preface this and say that last year I volunteered at Slope Day, had a good time as a volunteer, got some nice sun, got a good tan, met up with Janet, we had a great time watching Ben Folds. Ben Folds was a great live act. I know a lot of the undergraduates last year complained about it, thought it was a great choice. My first date with my girlfriend was at a Ben Folds concert, so it brought back good memories for me. Basically, I'm going to run down the resolution, the key points of it, and then explain why I'm doing this. Basically, last year, as you said, we granted Slope Day $2,000 for Slope Fest and $2,000 for the talent. I thought it'd be great to repeat that gesture again, especially in that focusing both on the Slope Fest, which I think is a great event, and the talent on the other hand. One of the things that concern me, and I've heard every year, that there's always one graduate student with a kid who gets turned away at the gate. And I think that's a shame because I feel that kid is just as a member of the Cornell community as I am. And basically what I would like to see, this Slope Day Programming Board do is, at least let them into Slope Fest. Or maybe make that area right above the cocktail lounge open for viewing. They don't have to get in. I'm not too worried about them getting in the alcohol area. I think it's fine if they stay away from that, but if we open that area up, I think that'd be great because I always hear about people getting turned away, and that's always been a big disappointment to me. So I've specifically asked for that, and basically we'll allocate them the money. And the reason why I'm doing this is, and despite all the contention last year, I think, Doug and I talked a lot about this last year, and what these community events mean to people at Cornell. And I think community events are very important things to have, especially end of the year stuff. It gets into that whole ritual thing. It creates a very strong sense of community for us. And I think, in many ways that's what Cornell is lacking, is these gigantic events. The only two times, Doug told me, the only two times that people get together here at Cornell are for hockey games, which have their own limitations, and for Slope Day. We've got to really focus on making these things, open to everyone. I have 10 minutes.
Oh, really?
That's
great.
But I won't take that long.
Okay.
basically, I think our involvement will have positive effects. I think over the past couple of years, the administration has been trying to take Slope Day into a more positive direction, and I think they have. I think that getting graduate and professional students more involved in the planning, in volunteerism, and just getting them down there on Slope Day will make a huge difference. And I think that's going to have a lot of positive effect in a lot of different places. Specifically, I think bringing up the maturity level of the slope will make it a much safer, much more pleasant place to be rather than seeing undergrads passed out. I think by doing this, I think our involvement can show a lot. I think it'll show a lot to the Cornell administration that we want to be, you know, a part and a leader of the Cornell community. And I think, you know, by showing that we're more involved, that'll highlight, you know, the impediments to us becoming more involved, like, you know, how hard it is for us to get to campus because of transportation issues, or, you know, that our housing spots are, you know, farther away from the undergrad, farther away from campus than the undergrads. So I think it's just going to highlight, you know, graduate student involvement, and I think it's a very positive step that Jen and I want this assembly to go in. And lastly, you know, some people said, well, early on, that this is, you know, a lot of money to spend on, you know, basically booze, and I don't think that's the case. I think this, you know, decision might eventually also have an economic impact. And I say that because Slope Day actually costs the university a lot of money. The undergrads actually chip in about $12 per student for the talent, and we're going to be given some money for the talent and Slope Fest as well. But in addition to the talent, there's other costs, like they have to put up the fence. They have to put up the porta potties. They have to put up tents here and there. They have to hire security, hire ambulances. And I think, you know, if we start to take Slope Day in a positive direction, which I think graduate and professional student involvement will do, I think that some of those costs, such as security, such as that extra ambulance that's needed, such as, you know, just overtime and Gannett or whatever, can be eliminated. And, you know, some of that money will get filtered back into, and a lot of this money is paid for by the Student and Academic Services Department. And I think a lot of that money will get back filtered back in to a lot of student services. So I think this is a very good investment financially. I think it's a very good investment for community involvement. And I think, you know, it's the right decision. And with that, I think I'll yield my time. I don't know if the Slope Day Programming Board wants to respond to my request for, you know, just to get more families in there.
Well, currently we do allow student doctors in for free as well. It's been a debate amongst us whether we think it's a safe environment for children, and I think we are moving in a direction that it will be more safe than it has been in the past, and it's definitely something we'll bring up in the district and talk about with this management.
Great.
Because, like I said, you do want graduate students, you want the entire community to enjoy school safe.
Then I'll give the microphone my time to share.
Yeah, can I also just mention, I've seen a real change. Of course, this was quite contentious last year, and in working with the Slope Day Committee last year and this year as well, I've seen a real change in the attitudes. I've seen a real change in real responsiveness to graduate students. Liz approached me right at the beginning of the year in September to be like, we want this to be different this year. We actually really want grads there because that fulfills our mission as well, to have this much more of an open and inclusive community. I should also mention that it is the intention of this group to apply for byline funding eventually in the actual legal way instead of, you know, coming to us at the last minute and asking for it. And they've been very conscientious in terms of trying to do that, in terms of trying to get some numbers of how many graduates are going, and in terms of trying to get our support in advance and try and secure some of that and build up some good relationships with our group. So I think this is actually the right time and opportunity for us to start getting involved in this event. And open the floor to questions and comments. Yes, Doug.
I asked about the numbers was something I was wanting to follow up on. I know that that's always been kind of a sticking point with, you know, some kind of like police officers said that they saw as many people kind of come through, which kind of what we heard last year. And so I was just wondering if, you know, in preparation for byline funding application, you had actually a very formal process that you can actually ask the numbers and not count on this stuff.
Yeah, well, because last year, every year we get a survey after Slope Day, and you could just see for undergraduate students seeing how many people go to Slope, what how they enjoy Slope Day overall, and also just have to know the engagement attitude. But last year we also did send it out to graduate students, and we also did that survey came back that 59% of the I know that number is well contentious among people here, but that's
who is that? Was that sent to all graduate students?
No, it's
sent
to a selection.
That was actually, just a point of clarification there. Oh, that was sent to all graduate students.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know it was all, because I know undergrads,
yeah,
they just select a certain number.
Yeah. I talked to Gannett about it, and I rather than fiddle around with like different the law school, the business school, and get the right number of samples from each school, I just send that to everyone.
So last year was
like undergraduate proven to be reliable data.
And so is the same, is that the same process that will happen this year?
Yeah, and there was, what would I want to say about that? The JPSA cooperated in putting that full day survey out together. And yeah, there's some contention about how the numbers worked out, but I think also last year was the first year that the GPSA actually gave money to Slope Day and tried to encourage people to go, and there was a big thing about it, so there was a lot more graduate student awareness that this was going on, and they were trying to open it up to grads as well.
Basically, what I got from the survey results was there was enough numbers on there to, you know, bring this up, and it, you know, the bare minimum would have been just over the student signatures required to get byline funding. Every time a group, the first time a group applies for byline funding, they must circulate a petition around the graduate student body and get those signatures. And I think you need about 15%. And the number, if you do the calculations all out, there were more than 15%. At the bare minimum, there was more than 15% of graduate students who said they went to Slope Day. So I think that's encouraging news and the right place to start. And next year, the survey will be the petition results will be how we initiate the byline funding process.
But that's what, you know what we think about this, but I want to hear what you guys think about this in particular. Is any other questions from the floor, any of our members? Issues, concerns, speaking out in support, speaking out against?
The number of signatures, do you mean at last year they had out
No, so say last year they afterwards they conducted a survey, and the survey was trying to gauge how many graduate students did go to Slope Day, and that's where they started to get some numbers back. So 59% of those who responded said that they went. So it's the beginning of gathering some data as to where they could go for positions for next year. Yeah, Ellen.
Is there going to be any change in marketing?
Yes, I actually talked with Janet earlier this year about that, and we plan on sending, she's doing a great suggestion of sending out posters. Normally we do, the undergraduate resident call, and we're also going to send posters to Maplewood and other graduate housing areas.
Yeah, because I think that no matter how much we would say, Slope Day is for everyone, it's still kind of hard to get that message.
Yeah, and I mean, if you have any suggestions at all, we're fully open to it.
We could have something in the ball.
Yes, that'd be a good idea. And sending out posters to core representatives as well, the posts in their place would normally done that.
I'm not going for that, but this is a place where graduate students as representatives in their departments meet in a unified place. So continuing to come back here and having yourselves on the agenda here at the GPSA certainly gives you the floor to communicate with the departmental representatives as they are elected by the department, then bringing them back. And if you bring us flyers, we can put them in our building. If you email Janet attachments in the flyer, it's better. We can print it out, in our places, just black and white from one of the places, or Netflix or whatever, and put them up in our locations. And if you live in a housing development that's not close to campus, surely we can put them there as well. So those are lots of different ways for you to get the news out to the graduate population, but most specifically to continue to communicate with them.
Yeah, good.
I have a question. As far as collecting, statistical data on who's represented or not, I was thinking, in order for, people to attend the Slope Day, you have to obtain a ticket or so. Can you contact people who, selling the tickets?
So, attend Slope Day if you're an undergraduate, graduate student, faculty, or staff member, or a student spouse. If you have basically a Cornell ID, you can get let into Slope Day. No tickets, yeah. Tickets are only for guests.
Kevin.
Mike, do you know with the survey, did they ask, if you didn't go to Slope Day, did you want to?
I had that question put in there. I don't, they've been kind of slow on the results?
Yeah, it's been pretty slow. I mean, I got the initial numbers, but I haven't gotten
any. I know, at least at the vet school, we all, everyone wants to go to slope day, but by May, half of us are in clinics, and only half of us can actually go. That might have artificially lowered them for us, at least.
Yeah, it's also a group that traditionally tends to go to slope day more. They tend to have been a Cornell undergraduate longer. Any
but the law school has the same problem, though. They are in exams then, too.
We end a week earlier, so that we're already well into exams.
Any further questions or comments, people?
I do have a suggestion. Because next year we are going to reset the student activity fee and decide which group projects will be funded. According to the procedure, you have to obtain attention and signature on a maybe.
But
you want to take some effort, you can cut out those at
the
end of
the
still day, or you know, before. So that next year, you're going to do the signature. The signature do have to be done, right? Yeah. Okay. If there's no problems with closing the question part, I'd like to move on to debate about this resolution. So if there's any changes you would like to see to the resolution itself, if there's any issues or concerns you have, just kind of bring it up. And it's nicely displayed on the board, too. I can zoom in, too. Oh, yeah, this Kevin's getting out of his glasses.
Yeah, right in front of you.
Yeah.
I think, right now I'm asking them to investigate it. And I know from talking with several Cornell administrators that this is the direction they want to take the things in. So I'm trying to move that forward and get it, pushed up to the top of the agenda. Is there anything you want to add?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say it's something that we will explore. I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's
anything else? Any changes? Okay. We'll move to a vote. Do you want to move?
I'll make the motion.
Okay. Kevin Nagel makes the motion. Would anyone like a second? Great. Rebecca. All right. On the motion, resolution number 6. Can I see a show of placards? All those in favor, please. And plus two extra votes from measure and zoning. All right, all those opposed? Abstention. All right, the resolution passes.
Thank you guys, that was a lot better than last year.
Excellent, and thank you guys very much for coming. I think Tamara's point of keep coming back to us, keep checking in with us, is a really good one, and we're very keen to throw whatever posters or whatever you throw at us up to the graduate student community as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Excellent. All right, so there's a number of other things that we need to take care of. One of the most pressing in particular is that the guidelines for funding for organizations that apply to us for money from the GPSAFC, the guidelines have been out of effect for the last 2 years and have been waiting for a review and reinspection and being put back together again. So I'd like to thank you very much for directing the Funding Policy Committee to conduct this review, and I'd like to turn it over to you to introduce the changes in Resolution number 7.
Okay. I can quickly walk you through the concept of this appendix B. It basically lays out how the student activity fee is spend it and what are the responsibilities of various groups who are sponsored by activity fees and their responsibilities and the basic line and the effective date. The first part is about finance mission itself, because it's separately funded by student activity and is responsible for allocating to among the student group, the graduate student group. If you go to our website, you can actually see how much each group gets last year, or I should say 2006 to 2008. And most of the groups are listed here. Part 3 went through the general guidelines for all the groups, and afterwards it starts listing groups one by one about their responsibilities and how they should spend these funds. Basically, we subtract all the specifics from their application documents. Before they apply for student activity fee, they submit the current five years of their budget or an outline of it, the major goal of their organization, how they're going to spend those funds, and how they will benefit the graduate student community from our support. So the members of my committee just went through the documents and summarized them. They also went back to the organization, sent the abstract to them and asked them whether this is accurate and whether they want to stick to it. Some of them get back to us, some of them haven't. But because of the time deadline, I just put the current documents together. They are also supposed to come to our meetings and report to us about the spending of the funds and their general performance. By far, the athlete groups already come and present in front of us. Also, the emergency medical service are planning on coming on February 12th. We haven't heard feedback from other groups yet. If you are one member of any of these groups or you have specific questions, you can either forward them to us and we can ask them directly, or we can continue to ask them whether or when they can come to our meeting to present directly. At least this document gives you an idea what kind of service they provide. Ideally, we would want to put all their applications online so that everybody can go to see. It's a good opportunity to find out various services those groups provide. But by reading this, you have a general idea. If you have any questions, you can ask me and I can go back to ask those groups.
Self-programming organizations, those are all the small clubs.
Okay. Which part?
What are self-programming organizations?
I think they are sponsored by finance commission.
That's all the small grad clubs, right?
Yeah, that's my kind of understanding.
Okay. And we have been talking about the role of the events committee or the communications end of whatever we wanted to propose. And I was thinking that you might want to encourage the part about regularly advertising their existence to include some section about reporting to the GPSA or some centralized website, a place where we can list events which we are sponsoring financially, so that if people want to know what's going on this week that their student activity is paying for, they can just come to the GPSA website. And that was an idea that we were kind of throwing around about what role the event committee would take, kind of more the facilitator of, you know, a communication place for what's going on.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of money going out. I mean, I know I'm in charge of an organization, which is a little, you know, a little department club, and we try to get people from outside of our department to come, and, you know, GPSA pays for our pizza too, but I think sometimes it's really hard.
I think, yeah, I should just clarify that for today, we're not voting on, the rest of these resolutions can't be voted on today because they require charter changes, so we'll vote on them next time. So this is the opportunity to bring up questions or changes or things that you want to see in the next draft, which will come to us in a month's time. So, yeah, I just wanted to clarify that. So do you have a response to that, or do you need to say
anything? Yeah, actually, that's the second part of our work. This is the first part. We are going to update the charter. About funding policy, finance commission, and president charter handbook, we are going to update the whole regulation this semester. So there are plenty of time to do this and other policy changes. We are going to hold a hearing and also meet with the finance commissioners to collect questions and change the rules to allocate the money towards the small businesses. This is just a general guideline. When they go to apply for funding, they will go to see the handbook of finance commission and president and treasurer. Yeah, handbook and bylaws. So we are going to update that. We already took a note of this suggestion and together with my others. At the end of this semester, we will submit for a change.
Yeah, I think it'll be a great opportunity to start. As long as you leave, because if people are used to doing things the way they used to, just like print everything off, stuff in mailboxes, you know, people aren't going to effectively
Well, the thing we wanted to do was have them submit to the Central Cornell Events Calendar and click that it was funded by GPSAFC, and then we can pull all of that data through RFS to our own website and display everything. So having something like that, that, and that can get changed as the technology changes, but that would be the requirement. Yeah.
Is it?
A question on that. Can they select multiple sources on that
Okay.
Good point. I don't know.
I've been actually talking to some people in university communications about this, and they're working on pretty much completely revamping the calendar, the events calendar. And I've actually shown.
That's true.
It's a big job to do, and I've actually shown them a couple. Websites like MIT has a great one. If you actually go to their graduate and professional student organization's website, they draw all their events, you know, all the events they fund onto their website on their front page from the university events calendar, because it also allows multiple tagging of different groups that are sponsoring it and whatnot. So that's where I eventually see things going, and I want these rules to be there eventually. And I know a major approached me back in October
about
it. And, you know, I think we're just waiting now for this project to be finished, which I was told by the end of the year. I was hoping that something would be available right now, but my hopes got the best of me. But I didn't want to do anything before the fact and had to reinvent it afterwards.
Well, is there a place on the GPSA website where we can just type a list and not necessarily have any kind of link for programs that are being funded, but to just list the programs that are funded by the GPSA? So if anybody's curious about what programs are funded by the GPSA, they just list them.
We do have a list right now of all the programs that are all the byline funded groups that are funded by the GPSA.
And I haven't explored the entire website, but is there a GPSA calendar of events?
There is a calendar of our meetings, which has, you know, links to our agendas and whatnot. Then there is a link on there, which actually goes to the tag on the Cornell Events website for GPSA events, for the actual. Our body, the GPSA, not the GPSAFC, but the stuff we would sponsor, like the ball, like these meetings. And those events are on there. Now, there's also a tag on there for GPSAFC-funded events. And I haven't, but it doesn't have anything listed on it yet. And the thing is, you know, that event calendar doesn't have in it right now the ability to do multiple tagging for different co-sponsorships. So a group would have to say they're Cornell Juggling Club and GPS AFC.
I should also explain, I want to ask actually you to summarize what the changes are in this document as well. That would be really helpful for us to know where to look, because we might be familiar with the stuff from 2 years ago. But I do want to, before that, just mention really quickly the difference. And in case you've forgotten, the difference between the GPSA FC and the GPSA and byline funding and what that means. When we collect the student activity fee from everybody, and this is what we set every 2 years, that we set last year, and we'll set again next year. When we collect the GPSA activity fee, it gets split up into different bylines, into different subgroups of funding. And some organizations on campus, like Cornell Cinema, the Concert Commission, EMS, that are listed in this Appendix B as like sort of separate organizations, they get to pull money directly from there. So they'll always take $3 or $4 or $10 or whatever it is from every student's activity fee, and that's reserved for them. That's what the Cornell, that's what the Slope Day Funding Steering Committee is hoping to apply for in a couple of years' time. The GPSA FC is its own finance commission. It's an independent funding body. The chair is Karen Kang, who never can come to these meetings because she has meetings at the same time, but is running the finance commission at the same time. They're doing a great job. I went to one of their meetings last semester. And that is a group of people sponsored sort of by the GPSA to take a big pot of money that comes out of that activity fee and allocate it to student clubs and organizations. So just to make sure that everybody's aware of what that difference is with byline funding and not. And that's where things can also get quite confusing on the event's website if there's things that are funded by the GPSA, for example, the ball, because that comes out of our own byline money, or the GPSA FC, or if it's, say, a law student event where they're also getting funding from the GPSA FC, and that's where some of the confusion is. On the website, we do have an events page. We have a page that links to who our byline-funded groups are, which might actually be too confusing for people to really figure out that's what that is. So we might look at changing that. And we've tried in the past to sort of do a kind of a calendar of events type thing, but maybe that's a good position to move to, given how slow the calendar, like the central calendar, is being in terms of being updated, like to take a bunch of things from the FC that are being funded and put those on the central events page. Or just even say, here are some of the organizations that we fund that are student groups.
Actually, I think this idea has been out for a long time, and it's really good because now we don't really have an idea what graduate student events are doing. The technical difficulty is we want to make it as a requirement, meaning any student group, if they are going to get reimbursement from us, they have to put their events on the calendar, otherwise we will reject their reimbursement. But our concern is some groups are not familiar with the process. They may forgot to do this, and when they come back to ask for reimbursement, we reject them, and they will be really angry. So we don't know whether this is whether the first year it should be mandatory, but definitely we will strongly recommend it and give them warning. For example, they can get up to one or two warnings every year, and the next time they will learn it. And that's also for their benefit, because it's free advertisement for them, and just spread out the influence of both their organization and our group. So I think we will work towards this direction, and we will highly emphasize it during the information session on finance commission, so that all the groups know this is a new policy. And hopefully from next year on, we will see more events on the channel.
Can I ask you then to summarize briefly the changes in this document in Appendix B as you put it together?
Mostly it's group-specific statements, because the general descriptions are quite standard and we didn't change them much. But if you look below each organization, they promise different things every year. So, for example, the Concert Commission, Cinema Programming Board, Emergency and Medical Services, Cigarette Bonds, Sporting Events. The last version, it was from 4 years ago. so a lot of contests are not accessible, or they were year specific to 4 years ago. So this year, as we, as I said, we summarized their application content and put them down here. As opposed to their promises, by getting our money, they're going to deliver these services. So if you find any problem, just
Yeah, we have this in working for years 2007 and 2009. And my thought with Appendix B was that it was supposed to go be applicable to each funding cycle. So this should be applicable to the funding cycle we're in now. And this was.
Yeah, that's
where
we
last
to 2007.
And then when we go
it's supposed to start from last
year. And then the way this pretty much works is, you know, the groups come to us for funding, and then we tell them, you know, what to do. And if they don't follow these rules, they don't get funded from us.
Yeah.
And it's basically a contract from them. So basically, I think there were like 2 or 3 points in here where it did say 2007, 2009. If it would just expire and say explicitly expire at the end of 2008, is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah, it should expire by the time they get that from the allocation.
Yeah.
Year.
Because we should be,
yeah, should be
working on this again next fall, pretty much.
Right. Next fall, but I think they will get new approval.
For the fall after, yeah. Okay.
Can I ask you if it's at all possible, normally when we have documents that have a lot of changes, if you could highlight what the changes are, sometimes by underlining them or by striking through?
Yeah, actually, my question was that way. Okay. I didn't send you that.
Okay. So can we see that maybe for the actual, when we're actually debating and voting on this next week, and we might need to make changes, that would be really helpful.
Yeah.
I'm sort of going through my old version of this and noticing that there's some changes, and I'd like to know more about why those changes were specifically made, so that would be helpful.
Or, like,
take it home, have a look through, email you with your comments. Are you meeting the Funding Policy Committee before our next meeting?
We haven't decided the meeting time yet, but I think we can just decide it by email.
Okay. So you are
YY235.
Okay. Yeah,
just a question about that. I know we're talking about what's the importance
of basically, if we want to make it into action from this method, we will reject their reimbursement if they don't put out.
Right, I guess what I'm asking is how are you monitoring?
Oh, because now we're only responsible for allocating the funds, but State Hall 109, they do all the reimbursement. That's a show getting funds from us. Even at the beginning of in April, we allocate a new budget to the group, but they can't get the money. They have to put up the event and then get the reimbursement. That's the control for the hierarchy of the finance or procedure. For example, if they spend funds out of the scope, we can get their reimbursement.
Tomorrow, do you want to take a live comment and then again? Oh, sorry?
Does anybody else have
anything else they want to say? Ask? Concern? Alright, go ahead.
As far as how to double check, you know, and this is what you were asking, how do you double check sort of the quality control that are being advertised as the requirements that it should be? When the groups come here and ask for funding, they should have with them a flyer, a budget, and a mission or whatever, a request, and
they should be able to provide the GPSA or the SD, I guess, with that information so that we can ensure that we can participate in helping them advertise to the graduate community or the community at large, so that that part of the requirements is taken care of and they're not rejected.
Right now, the funding works in this way. In April, we allocate annual budget. Meaning, if they have a regular event to help on a yearly basis, they can put in their annual budget application. So that when they go to put off those events and spend the money, they don't really come back to us again. So a lot of events is already mentioned in annual budget, we don't really see the application again. And when they apply for any budget, if you're like 7 months or a year in advance, they don't really have the flyers or any details about the events yet. Or if they apply for special project requests, that's why we don't really have clear control. But the check is afterwards. If they go ahead and spend the money, come back with receipts, they're supposed to give us printouts and flyers, show they mentioned it's sponsored by GPSAFC, and they should also print out the web page. If they put it up on the event calendar, they should print it out and show the dates. Otherwise, we won't give them the money. That's okay.
So then I guess the issue is that for the date when you have it, would then be, is it better to have these people come to us with this advertising and such after the fact? Or should we help them make sure that they have everything taken care of as they should in order to get their reimbursement before?
Actually, last year, the year before last, we went to this additional meet. We meet with finance officers from different schools. Different schools do it differently. Some of them don't have annual budget proof, and they just proof on an event basis. But that will add a lot more work. Now we meet every month, and we still have a lot of applications to go through. If all the events have to go through the meeting, maybe it has to meet more often and have more workloads. So right now, we didn't do much work on this. We just approve it on a yearly basis and deal with the special project request.
I mean, things do get rejected. I mean, at the meeting I was at, they were like, well, you said you would do this, you said you would do that, and then they didn't, and so things got rejected, or like when they come and apply for funding the next time around, they'll get rejected. So that is remembered, like the group is pretty vigilant about that. I really do want to move on to other resolutions. Is there anything really pressing to say about this? This is one of the first things that groups really see about us, though, like external groups that are not associated with the GPSA when they start to apply for funding, things like Appendix B and things like our handout for a handbook for FD-funded groups for their treasurers. So kind of important that we talk about it. All right, can we move on? Excellent. So we'll have that up for debate next time. Great. And we have three other resolutions that we wanted to bring past you guys. And Mike, you want to start with resolution 8, which is about committee appointments.
Okay, this should be quick. But basically, I went over the GPSA charter trying to find some problems with it. And I found out that although we have, you know, a procedure in place for staffing our internal committees, such as events committee, the funding policies committee, the SD, stuff like that, we don't have procedures in place to staff the external committees. And these are the committees that certain other university groups, like the University Assembly, the Graduate School, Faculty Senate, and some groups all over the place give us the power to appoint. But, you know, in some cases in the past, we previously had, you know, elections here by the body, or we've just, or the executive committee's done it themselves, or the operations staffing committee has taken it on. There's been no one single defined way to do this. So I basically wrote up a couple charter amendments to kind of fix that problem. And I hope that you all look it over and tell me if I'm missing anything, because there was a lot of committees, and I don't know if I missed one or included one that's actually defunct right now, which is very well could be the case. And some of these I still have to do some legwork on, like faculty senate committees. I'm not sure whether we have a spot on them. So to summarize, basically, the executive committee shall make appointments to university committees, liaison positions, and all other external committees that become vacant prematurely. I think that's pretty standard. Basically, get it going. Just in the case if we need someone pretty soon for that committee. And GPSA appointments to external committee. What we basically did was we broke it up into two groups. The second group is university assembly committee appointments. And the operations and staffing committee has been responsible for staffing internal committees, and we're saying, okay, now get together with the graduate and professional representatives of the university assembly and appoint, the representatives or members of these, following committees that the UA has given us powers to appoint. And then I just listed a whole bunch of committee spots that the operations and staffing committee should appoint by themselves. The operation and staffing committee is chaired by Arnab, our secretary, and it includes all committee chairs, myself and Janet. And basically, I think the only two big things in this, in previous years, it was the operations and staffing committee and the exec committee that did these appointments, but this is actually laying it out in the charter. The only two things in here that kind of contradict what's been done in the past is 99A 1 and 2. In previous years, we have elected either at this body or in the council members to both the general committee of the graduate school and to the university neighborhood council. I was thinking this over, and I spent a lot of time deliberating on this, and I did not want to be accused of having the operations and staffing committee take up too much power. But I am concerned, even though we do have, I think, two good people on the general committee of the graduate school this year, that in one case, because this committee deals with measures and stuff about confidentiality, having an election kind of half-heartedly in a body like the Council of Representatives is not the proper place to vet the candidates and to kind of say, okay, this person may be lacking in this skill, there might be a problem with this person. I don't feel that that's the best spot to do that. And I don't know if anyone had any comments they'd like to make on this one issue here. I think that's pretty much the biggest change of what's been done in the past. The rest is pretty much setting all these appointments and the process of it into stone. Basically, it's going to be done by the operations and staffing committee, which is I think about seven people in total.
It's all the committee chairs and the three executive committee members. Yes, and also we have a application on the website, and most people actually apply through the web, and that's actually most of it is external, so it's not even people on the Council of Representatives. And there's like drop-down lists of things that you can apply for and things that you might be interested in doing. And then you get to write in your interests, your skills, your background, the things you think you bring to the position. And then we all sit down together at the beginning of the year and have a big meeting where all of those applications are printed out, and we go through all of those applications and review them and put them into committees.
So the
I think the operations and staffing committee usually has a couple more years' experience, and they're able to see what these committees are and what they do. And I think having that knowledge allows them to know what they're looking for and knows what the right kind of candidate is and the right kind of experience is. And I think that in many of these cases we might start conducting an interview or two. If there are a number of candidates interested. I think in some of these cases, especially with the general committee of the graduate school, we would make a call at the end of the year, before the year of appointment, for applications for that position.
But feel free to disagree.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a change, and we recognize this is a change, and Mike is like, here's some things I think we should change. And so that means that he needs to hear from you guys as to whether or not it's appropriate, what you want different, what we do value, which way of appointing you do value. So, but the problem is that there is no way, the charter does not say how people should be elected to the Graduate School General Committee. It doesn't even say that they should be elected. It says nothing about a process for that. And it says nothing about a process for the other University Assembly Committees. It doesn't say that the people that are actually the representatives of the University Assembly should maybe help with that.
Yeah.
So trying to put all of that into a section of the charter and say, here's the other things you got to appoint, based on our experience of going, oh my God, what are we going to appoint and how are we going to talk about it?
Who do we have the power to appoint?
And where do they need to go? So that's the spirit behind this, and if you disagree with how that is being done, then we need to hear that. I can't hear you. Sorry, what? Sorry?
I said I can't disagree with something when I don't know how it works. So there's nothing to do.
The problem is we didn't know how it worked either.
Yeah. Basically,
and if there's like a massive turnover in the GPSA exec next year, which there very well could be, we're going to end up at the same place again, and people are going to be like, wait, what do we do? And calling the Office of Assemblies, which last year had this major breakdown, and so we didn't really know what, there was no institutional memory there either. So part of this is to say, okay, here's the institutional memory, here's what you got to do at the beginning of the year, and it's got to be done before the end of September.
Yeah, I want to say, currently also, applicants are allowed to list their top five preferences by looking at every committee on the website. And from there, we also get a better read on all the applicants, what positions they apply for. It's not a foolproof method by any means. It's almost, you know, completely objective based on the committee member chairs and, you know, the executive committee. So, yeah, I agree with Mike and Janet. There has to be a big revamp in how we have to do this, especially for future boards.
Charles. Sorry, my computer just ran into battery. Go ahead.
I may have missed part of this, but I think if I was to agree to not going that A or B, to find out, you know, have the operations and staffing committee outline some type of process by which they would make these elections as opposed to it's just like a black box in terms of, you know, what you all would do for selecting these candidates. I'm sure it's a pretty universal process and not going to be very different from what goes on now, but if you're going to take full control of this,
right now there's no delineation on what criteria are necessary for each position, which would be helpful, I think, for some value in the future.
Basically, you know, using the general committee as an example, what happens is in the code of legislation, it's a little red book that the graduate school hands out, the code of legislation for the graduate faculty. Basically, there's a line in it, and I have it printed out right here, two graduate students selected by the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly as non-voting members. Now, they pretty much give the power to choose that person however we want. And we just gotta outline it, I think, in our charter.
You see what Charles is saying is,
yes.
You know, I want that not to be black box. I want it to say, here's what the Operations and Staffing Committee is going to do when they sit down at the end of September and assign people to committees, and here's the process of that. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and I mean, it can be fairly high level, I understand. It might not be a good use of time to outline it in great detail, but exactly.
But okay.
Make it known how you're going to go about it.
Yes, it's in the charter already, and I think he clarifies in this, Mike clarifies here, first of all, who the Operations and Staffing Committee are, or what their responsibilities are, and then also that during the course of the year, sometimes these things will be vacant. And then in those cases, the Executive Committee, not the entire Operations and Staffing Committee, so just the Vice President, President, and Secretary, by majority vote can elect a candidate that is applied for the position. And this actually has just recently come up that something was open, and it was like, how are we going to fill this? Do we have to get everybody together? Do we have to have a majority? Can it just be the secretary appointing or what? So that was an attempt to clarify what happens if something comes up in the beginning, in the middle of the semester as well. Cecilia?
Can there be something for the signature vacancies? I know the code that it talked about was something that was like open and then got filled very quickly before there was even call. Who's interested in doing that.
Yep.
And I think that doesn't mean you may not necessarily get the best qualified candidate. One, what would be, well, I guess it's the next time I'd like to see something when you have a signature, they can do what's the process. Maybe say you're going to wait for 1 week, 2 weeks, something like that. So if you have time to respond, you would say that you're waiting for it.
Yeah, we should maybe draft. This might not be the best place to do it, but we could draft like a byline amendment or something like that. We should talk about that. We should tell us how to do that. That's a good point too.
Basically, to respond to that one and to Charles' comments, I think that's important. But again, you know, some of these positions, you know, really may open up during the middle of the year, and you know, but somebody might be interested at the same time. And it's not stuff like the Student Library Advisory Committee, but even some years like CJC is like not even active.
Right, I'm just
you know,
saying, but it's hard to tell from this is supposed to be a target for all time. Like, who would have known last year that the CJC was going to be so important this year?
Yeah.
So it seems like
exactly. Yeah, I agree. And that's exactly the kinds of issues we're trying to address together.
And basically, yeah, this may be a black box, and, you know, please help us to fill it up. I mean, but this is basically, right now we have no box. So your comments on how to do this are welcome. And, you know, just remember, you are the ones to actually vote for the Operations and Staffing Committee. It's, you know, every leadership position that you vote for in the spring. So,
are there any other comments about this in discussion for the next presentation that would be helpful for Mike in his revamping?
I still have some confusion of how it's done now. I thought whenever there is a spot open,
you were there. Staffing at the beginning of the year?
So I'm saying whenever there is a spot open up for some committee, I thought it's good to bring up in either assembly meeting or meeting. And you ask around for volunteers, and then we take a vote.
Sometimes that happens, and then sometimes things like the CJC, we found out that there was a spot open, and somebody talked about that at a meeting, and then somebody applied, and then somebody else found out after he was like prematurely appointed, and it was like, wait a minute, there was no public declaration of this, and there was no whatever. So I think that's just a serious thing we should call for. If that means when something becomes open, maybe what we do is publicize it on GPSA Info and GPSAL, maybe we have a vote at the assembly meeting, or maybe that's the time when everybody collects, like, submits their interest and the executive committee looks it over. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
want
this to be a procedure.
Yeah. As opposed to the sort of ad hoc, oh, we voted last time. Oh, last time we had applications. Oh, what did we do before that? Which was,
And sometimes it depends on the urgency of the situation. Like Michael was saying, some years they don't even have committees that are currently, you know, defunct. They go out, you know, they come back, like the CJC, and all of a sudden we need representation on it. And if we don't, it's also detrimental for us not to have representatives and to have like a formal voting procedure on how it should be done. So we just try to fill the spots sometimes, just so we have somebody on there for that time being.
Yeah.
On that point, then, if you want to provide like a safety hatch for yourself in case something comes up where you have to have somebody there, like within a week, and the deadline say you're supposed to have to see, maybe there can be some phone number.
Yeah, like maybe the secretary goes, or maybe the vice president goes, or something until the suitable candidate is found, or something. Okay, this is good. All.
Please send me feedback. I want to hear back on this one.
Okay, can I close discussion on this for the moment and move to the next one? Great. Yay, and how much fun is this?
This is the stuff we're supposed to do. Let's go over the charter every once in a while.
I make my undergrad go.
I'm almost there.
No. Okay, fine. Resolution.
Okay.
Take it.
Okay. So Janet and I went to the Ivy Summit back in November, and I was talking to people from Harvard. And what they have on their graduate student council is something that's called a council to the, or I don't even know what they called it. It was like advisor to the assembly or something, or advisor to the council. So basically, what it was a emeritus position for previous presidents and vice presidents. And it basically kept those people around. They gave them a nice little name to put on their resume and, you know, just to still ask advice from. And help guide them along as the year went on. So I thought that was a great idea. And basically, I was looking over the charter, and we do have a position called an archivist. But because the role has been really, I think, well done by the Office of Assemblies and Ari here with his website, in archiving all of our data and resolutions and minutes and audio, I think, you know, we really don't need that position anymore. But at the same time, it's great to have somebody with institutional memory who still, you know, knows, I guess, the Brian Holmes, who's a former president of the GPSA. His expression would be, I know where the bodies are buried. So basically, it's just, you know, it's something to basically keep the former leaders involved. I think it's going to be important this year because as of right now, Jen and I don't have any plans to stay on in the executive positions. I don't know about Arnab. We haven't talked about this. So I think it'll help. I'm still willing to hang around next year and offer advice. I don't know about Janet. We might actually end up running against each other for this position. But I think it's a good idea, and I would welcome some comments.
I don't want to run against you for this position. What are you talking about?
Kevin, all right, you got it.
I'm Terry. Okay. Kevin.
What if no previous leader wants to run this?
There's a stipulation at the end of it. This position may remain vacant if a suitable candidate is not found.
Or if we collide and it dies out.
This position is not paid by them, but several, like one for president, one for vice president.
Because they are going to be out for
election
anyway.
True.
We
could do it in half year.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a single position. It also,
yeah.
I mean, because if, say, next year, I would want someone to consult as much with you and me as with, say, Brian.
Yeah.
Or Tim.
Yeah.
Or Anne.
Is this position for
advice
or is this for effective transition?
I think both. I really think it's for both. I think it's for whatever the executive committee, the new executive committee, needs it to be. And I think it helps. I think, you know, last year Brian Holmes, who was the president 2 years ago, really was an effective mentor of me. And even though he was not at Cornell, his advice really helped, I think, things along and prepare me for this year. And I consider this to be the Brian Holmes memorial position.
We call it the Brian Holmes chair.
Brian Holmes chair. But basically, it's just, as I said, you know, this is pretty much upon request of the new executive committee. It's pretty much to be whatever they need it to be. But, you know, at the same time, the executive committee can't really tell this person to, okay, do all the work for you.
Yeah.
We're trying to get group or committee memory. Maybe a committee would be better served in this position than one single person. For example, if you choose to step down and then the next president only runs for 1 year, but there are things that happened 2 years ago that they need to reference, as well as the previous year, that to have an institutional memory of a more collaborative group.
The collection of old dead guys.
You're saying that certain issues don't get raised in a given year, but they may be too big 2 years later.
That's true. And something like, you know, next year it might be more valuable to talk to, say, Tim McConaughey about setting the graduate activity fee for this particular event than it would be to ask for Brian. Don't give me that look. I know that's a good floor, but does that make sense? If there's different things that happen in different years.
Does make sense, yeah.
Good thought.
No, it doesn't say anything about the length of the tenure, so you might want to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like the idea of perhaps a kitchen cabinet. I've been on a number of boards, trustees and board of directors of different organizations, and very often there's been a series of people who have been in the executive division and moved on to their fairly nice capacity, so it might be a valuable option.
Mm-hmm.
Cecilia. Rebecca.
I know when mentioning some of the former presidents, a lot of us have moved on to places other than Cornell, so I feel like assuming we're stipulating that the person should not be a current Cornell grad.
I think I might actually stipulate that it is. You know, I joke around about you know, Brian not being here, but I think it, somebody should be on campus.
I think it should be classified.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other further comments on this? And if not, please email Mike and let him know what you think if you come away from this and have some other things germinate. By that clock, we have 3 minutes left.
How much do you need?
I don't know, 2 minutes?
Motion to extend the meeting by...
Well, don't extend it. It's fine.
Five minutes.
Always extend a meeting.
Just go.
Okay.
Go.
We don't care.
I'm going to hand the chair over to you.
So okay.
You make resolution 10.
All right. I'm in charge. Janet, go.
Great.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay, so basically this is a resolution that would follow up on the funding of Slope Day, and we're trying to ensure that there's going to be adequate representation of graduate students on the Slope Day board, and the programming board, programming committee, the series, they have so many committees, but make sure that there's graduate students that are actually elected to those positions in this process that's described by the operations and staffing committee. And I think that's an effective way to make sure that graduate student involvement is maintained in the actual development and planning of Slope Day. So until now, it's sort of been like sort of an open, general kind of position and not actually codified, and this would want to see that codified, because I think if we're going to continue this kind of involvement in Slope Day, we want to be sure our money is being spent effectively and that our voice is being heard. And the second part of this resolution indicates that one person who's serving on one of these Slope Day committees should also co-serve on the events committee or serve as a liaison to the events committee so that effective communication continues. So, open to questions.
Just kind of what you said at the beginning, like Slope Day has so many committees. If you could maybe put in like a description of each of the committees so that people might know what they're applying for, it's more than...
Okay.
In the 9AA, they mentioned that at least one student should be self-serve and ex-officio member.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any going to be any method for deciding which student or student that is or
I hadn't said that specifically, and I think that's because one of those might be an executive position. I think the steering committee in particular would like to hold an executive position open for grads, and in that case, it's questionable as to whether that would be, if you want to get that person who's so heavily involved also doing this, it would probably be one of the other two, so I would leave that up to them to figure out. But, yeah, that's a good point.
And this is at least one, so if you want to.
Yeah, if the two want to be there, sure. We don't have the rule anymore, so it was voted down at the beginning of the year. So. Are there any other thoughts or comments that you can say?
Charles. So if we pass this, then this is just go to the undergraduate assembly for just another approval? Like, because we're forcing, not forcing positions, but...
Yeah, that's a good point. This is what the Slope Day Committee has asked us to do, and they are sort of an external organization as far as I understand. So that's what they have asked us for, specifically in the past. I'm not sure if it needs to go by the SA, but I will ask them.
It shouldn't. They're pretty much given us the power to make this decision for them.
And they've asked us specifically for these positions.
Yeah, it's basically the same thing with the general committee of the graduate school. They gave us the power to choose that person. Now we're trying to dispel how that position is selected. Celia? Okay, great. Anything else? Any more discussion? Okay, the next... Handing it back to Jenna now.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for your patience and your really good input. And now you know where to email each of us for input on the resolutions. The next meeting is a core meeting. It will be here again on the 12th of February. I won't be here, but Mike will be. And if there's nothing else, then I'd like to say we've adjourned. On time.
Laddie.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.